It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. What looks like an octopus and sounds like a wailing cat? Well, of course, we're talking about bagpipes. And you're hearing my next guest, E.A. Channon, playing the bagpipes. He's been playing them for over three decades, winning awards and performing for the likes of Queen Elizabeth, President Reagan, and Princess Diana. He's written a book about his experiences called Ballad of a Bagpiper, Whatever Blows Up Your Kilt. He joins us by phone from Portland, Oregon. E.A. Channon, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good morning. How are you, Sam?
I'm well, and you?
Not too bad. Just enjoying my typical Scottish summer day right now. Raining, overcast.
I can see that the Pacific Northwest suits you for those used to that wet Irish Scottish climate. As I understand it, you were born in England, but you grew up in the United States.
I was because of my dad was in the British military. We traveled all over the world, so I was born in north of England, grew up in Scotland. But I also grew up in Canada, the United States, Germany. And then when I became of age, I joined the military myself, and so Her Majesty sent me all around the world. So I grew up all over the United States, Canada, and just ended up, you know, having so much love for the country that when I left the military over there, I decided to move up over here.
What significance do bagpipes have in the military?
Well, in the British military, it's a tradition that's gone back definitely to basically the mid-1800s. Queen Victoria had such a love for the bagpipes that she really thought that it should be part of a main structure of the British military. They had been played in the British military before, but she was more of the, you know, we need to make sure that this is done. So everywhere the British military went, you would always have bagpipes. So that's why bagpipes are literally played all around the world. Not saying that they're all Scottish, because there's over 300 different versions of the bagpipes. It's just the ones that you see normally in the parades around the world and stuff. Those are the ones that the British military plays, which is the Scottish Highland bagpipes, the loudest and the biggest, which is how the Scots like it.
Well, there's certainly a tremendous tradition behind this instrument. You yourself are not that old of a fellow. I'm curious as to how and why you ended up taking up the bagpipes instead of, say, the electric guitar or the drums or something like that.
I would love to have taken up the guitar. I think the guitar is a wonderful instrument. I started off at 3 years old playing the piano. My parents were both classical pianists, and they had hoped that I'd become the next Beethoven or Bach because they were on the way of doing it themselves. So they put me down at 3 years old. My mom, a very strict German, basically made me practice, you know, hours on day. But at that time, they didn't know what ADHD was, so they couldn't understand why I was constantly jumping all over the bench. Meanwhile, my grandfather, who had actually played the bagpipes during World War II, pulled me off the side and secretly started teaching me to play the bagpipes. So I, as my sister told me years later as a joke, you kind of came out at 5 years old and told your mom and dad, "Mom, I'm a bagpipe player." And it's been, as my mom has put it, it's been hell since.
What do you like about the bagpipes? Are they hard to play?
Well, I love what I love about the bagpipes is what they were made for. Is they get the attention. And I love the fact that I could sit there and play in my backyard, in my street, at a park and stuff. And I just, I love how people, you either love it or you hate it. And of course, my grandfather used to say, if you love it, that means you're a true Celt. If you hate it, you must be French. But I just love the fact that people love the instrument. I think when it comes to actual playing, I think that, yes, it's a hard instrument because it takes so much concentration, so much of your body to actually get the instrument going. The only easy part about the bagpipes say, compared to the piano, is the bagpiper only has 9 notes, while a piano player has 54, so that makes it a really easy instrument to pick up if you have a problem with remembering notes. But the hard part is I look at it as you're tapping your head, rubbing your stomach, and doing jumping jacks at the same time. So you're doing all these different things, because in reality, you're actually playing 4 different instruments. You're not just playing one, because each pipe that's coming out is technically its own instrument. So that's the part that kind of makes it hard, because you have to get them all in tune, so they all sound right, because if you don't get them in tune, then that's definitely where you get the joke that they sound like a dead shape. It just takes time, and like anything else in this world, you know, after 38 years, I'm still learning new things, and it's going to take the rest of my life to what I consider personally to become an expert.
We're talking with E.A. Channon. He is the author of a book called Ballad of a Bagpiper, Whatever Blows Up Your Kilt. You've had some amazing experiences playing the bagpipes and playing for dignitaries. How did you end up getting to play for Queen Elizabeth?
Oh, I was 10 years old at the time, and I was out in the Scottish Highlands fishing with my dad and my grandfather. And at the time, I had a cousin who was the Secretary of Transportation for Margaret Thatcher. And it turns out I didn't realize it, because I was just having a good time being outdoors and such, that we were just down the road from Balmoral Castle, which during the summertime is where Queen Elizabeth summers. So we were just out there, and I just luckily happened to bring my kilts and my bagpipes with me. And he found out, my cousin, that Queen Elizabeth was going to have some dignitaries visiting, and she thought it'd be really nice to have, you know, the local instrument play. Well, she normally has a bagpipe player who wakes her up in the morning, which I always thought, you know, what a wonderful way to wake up. That's an alarm clock you can never actually turn off unless you shut the window. But he, I guess, was sick or something came up, so my cousin ran over, grabbed me, put me in my uniform, brought me back. And of course, as old kids growing up in the UK and Europe, we're used to seeing castles and all sorts of medieval type stuff, but this is a working castle. And just seeing all the people around was just exciting for me. So when an army officer came up and told me, right, this is what you need to do, play, don't do anything, just walk in, play, don't nod or anything like that, don't stare, just look at the floor. So I went in, started playing, and when I'm turning to leave, I did look up, and I saw this lady sitting off to the side, and I thought, gosh, that person looks really familiar, I can't place her. And I'm walking out, and the person, that army officer, walks up and says, you know, you did a great job, Her Majesty loved it, have a great time, thank you so much for coming. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's who it was. And I almost passed out.
And how about playing for President Reagan?
Oh, that was a lot of fun. I was in D.C. when I was a teenager, and this same cousin was in town doing some public political work, and he asked me to come with him, and we're just walking along doing the tour of the White House. And I wasn't wearing my kilt or anything like that, but somebody came out who knew my cousin, and they were talking, and my cousin just said, oh yeah, he plays the bagpipes, you know. Oh well, you know, President Reagan, he's Irish. And we're all going, yeah, we kind of understood that, the name and such. And he goes, oh well, he would love to hear the bagpipes, do you have them with you? And I'm like, yeah, actually they're in my hotel. And they said, right, well, go get them and come back. So it took me about 2 hours to go get them and come back. But I came back, and I went out on the lawn, and I played a couple of tunes, and the president came out, and we talked for a couple of minutes, and kind of went from there. And it was wonderful. And at that time, and up to this time, I was never political. I was just like, hey, how are you? I just thought it was a great time. And he was a really, really nice guy. And we just talked about Ireland and Scotland and the bagpipes and music and all sorts of stuff. It was a lot of fun. And I personally just wanted to talk about cowboys and such.
Yes, he would certainly know about that. Now, what is the difference between Irish and Scottish bagpipes?
Well, like I said, there's different bagpipes, but the main Irish bagpipe that a lot of people might not know of is called the Ulian bagpipe, and it's a bagpipe that actually lays on the person's lap. So while the player is sitting there, he can actually use kind of like a bellows type pump that he can either put under his arm or on his under his foot, and he uses that to actually blow the air in or through the instrument, leaving the player to be singing while he's actually playing, which is great. Or as my wife, who's Irish, always puts it, it gives the Irish player the ability to drink while he's playing. I always thought that was perfect for an Irish player. But that's the main difference between Irish and Scottish bagpipes. But there's also the bagpipe that you see on parades. They're played on the left shoulder. And there's actually bagpipes that are the same size but are played on the right shoulder. And some people say because they're played on the right shoulder, they come from Ireland, while the Scots had to be different and they had to put them on the left.
We're talking with E.A. Channon, who is an experienced and award-winning bagpipe player and author of a book called Ballad of a Bagpiper. Before we wrap this up, we're going to be talking here in a couple of minutes about the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Pittsburgh. As people are lining up along the route, what should they watch for when the bagpipers show up?
Oh, I would just say just enjoy the fact that they're walking by. You know, bagpipes, of course, were an instrument and still considered in the UK an instrument of war. So when you're watching them walk by, just think of the history that's behind that particular instrument. That instrument has been around since the Egyptian times. So you're looking at one of the oldest instruments in the world besides the drum and the human voice. That significant, loud creature that's sitting on that guy's shoulder, that lady's shoulder, is just got so much history behind it, good and bad. And it's been around the world, and that person that's played it is just having a blast and just having a good time playing it. And just have fun watching them sweat to death, because, like I said, it takes a lot to play that thing, and most of the time, unless it's raining, snowing outside, they're sweating.
Well, funny you should mention that, because they are, in fact, predicting rain and or snow for Saturday. How does that affect a person playing the bagpipes?
It really does, actually, because the bagpipes are actually a very temperamental type of instrument because it's a wood instrument. So going from cement to, say, dirt can actually knock them out of tune. Going from the inside of a house to the outside knocks them out of tune. And the weather does the same thing. So if it's 80 degrees outside, then all of a sudden it goes to snow. That knocks them right out. I personally believe that about 60, 65 is the perfect temperature for the bagpipes, because normally wood seems to, well, especially with the bagpipes, they seem to love that type of temperature. Anything hotter, they have a little bit of problem, and anything colder, it just depends on, you know, how long the person keeps them warm, because that's the main thing, is you have to constantly keep air going through them, because you have to keep them warm. But, yeah, if it's raining and then instantly turns to snow, the person on the parade route watching won't hear the significant change in it, but the player might be able to hear the difference.
And they'll just soldier through, because, after all, it's the St. Patrick's Day Parade. E.A. Channon, his book is called Ballad of a Bagpiper, Whatever Blows Up Your Kilt. E.A. has been our guest, joining us by phone from Portland. Thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh, and happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
Happy Paddy's Day to you as well. And I'm glad that Pittsburgh is celebrating. The theme this year is Peace in the North. I think that's wonderful. I was stationed in the Army, and I think Belfast and Northern Ireland needs more peace.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Pittsburgh's annual St. Patrick's Day parade gets underway on Saturday morning in downtown Pittsburgh. It's the second largest St. Patrick's Day parade in the United States. And I'm joined now by phone by Pat O'Brien, Pittsburgh's St. Patrick's Day parade chairman. Pat O'Brien, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me on today, Paul.
How did Pittsburgh's St. Patrick's Day parade get to be the second largest in America?
Well, a study was done several years ago around the nation by an investigative reporter who went around and actually checked on the different parades and found that with the number of groups that we have in the parade and the number of spectators, that put us second in the nation behind New York.
So New York has the largest and Pittsburgh is number two.
That's according to the investigative reporter to check that out.
Wow, bigger than Chicago even. That's tremendous. Now, how old is Pittsburgh's St. Patrick's Day Parade? How far back does it go?
Well, the first recorded St. Patrick's Day Parade was March 17th, 1869.
That's going back a ways.
Yes. Yeah, there was a break somewhere in the early part of the century. And then it was resurrected again around 1950.
So there was a break, and then it's gone on consecutively now for, what would it be, 63 years then?
This would be the 63rd consecutive year.
So how much planning and preparation goes into this event? I mean, with so many Irish in Pittsburgh, so many people who just enjoy celebrating St. Patrick's Day, all eyes are upon what you put together. What do you have to do to get this thing up and running?
Well, as you say, about 40% of the population of the greater Pittsburgh area claims Irish ancestry. So we've never found any problem with getting enough people on our parade committee. And planning goes on nearly all year. But in September, it kicks into high gear up until the day of the parade.
What are some of the other fun facts about this parade? In addition to the fact that it's the second biggest in the United States, what are some other things that people might be interested in that they may not know?
Well, we also, along with the parade, have a St. Patrick's Irish Fest at Market Square from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's a family-friendly event. No open container law is enforced. And we have musicians, dancers, face painters, and other entertainment down at Market Square. We also try to make the parade family-friendly. And so this year we're able to bring on about 10 additional groups in the parade that the whole family enjoys, especially the youngsters, along with horse acts. Steely McBean will be there. We have just a multitude of things for the kids to watch.
Yeah, it's really not an event, at least a prestigious event in Pittsburgh, without Steely McBean showing up. Now,
this is the first year we'll have him.
Is that right? Well, by golly, that's going to be great. Now, what is the route that this parade is going to follow?
We line up on Liberty Avenue from 11th to 28th Street. We start off from there, go over to Grant. Grant to the Boulevard of the Allies. We make a right, go to the reviewing stand at Stanwix, and the parade ends up at Commonwealth Place.
How many people are you expecting to show up?
Well, depending on the weather, it's generally an average around 200,000. Last year it was predicted estimated that we had approximately 380,000.
Was that a record?
It probably was. I couldn't say for sure because we never really keep track of how many people are at the parade. But, since I've been dealing with the parade, that's probably the most I've ever seen.
We're talking with Pat O'Brien. He is the chairman of the Pittsburgh St. Patrick's Day Parade. Talking about that big turnout last year, of course, a lot of it had to do with the fact that it was a beautiful weather, warm, sunny in the 70s. The weatherman is not predicting that for Saturday. It is supposed to rain and or snow on Saturday. What kind of headaches does that create for you?
not a lot of headaches. We just consider that a fine Irish mist.
So it goes on, rain or shine, everybody, the bagpipes, the costumes, the floats, all of that, no problem.
No problem. Usually everybody has some contingency plan for the rain for this day. It's the end of winter, beginning of spring in Pittsburgh, so you never know what to expect. So you know, most of the groups in the parade are accustomed to whatever it takes to get in and finish up.
And then when it's all over, what do you do, Pat, besides breathe a huge sigh of relief?
Well, I usually attend one of the after-parade parties, you know, around town. Go out to my brother-in-law's house. He has some Irish entertainment there and has a little party for the folks coming from the parade.
And then you've got all next day to celebrate because the actual St. Patrick's Day falls on Sunday. So it should be a busy and fun weekend. And Pat O'Brien, we thank you for joining us to share some of the behind-the-scenes information about Pittsburgh's St. Patrick's Day Parade. Good luck, and may the luck of the Irish be with you on Saturday.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate being here.
Pat O'Brien is chairman of the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Pittsburgh. Coming up, the New Girl treats us to a spa day when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.